wealth is actually made through business and preserved through real estate. You're flipping a home, you're only as good as your last flip. And the way you really get cash flow is through equity. It's through having a margin between what you owe or what you're going to pay and what you're getting in rent.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Vance Courtney, I'm excited to have you here. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate being here and having me on here, man.
I appreciate your time here. Say, we all got started somehow, somewhere in real estate. What was your first entry point into real estate?
Well, actually, I'll start it when I was in the Navy, in the military. My first 4 years, my chief told me, hey, you know, pull the retirement out of the military, but every time you move, hold on to a property because you have two retirements. And so in 2008, you know, I bought my first personal home as a plan for an investment, even though we were going to live into it. And I was doing that every 2 years, all the way until, I don't know, 2018. And I'm like, this is way too slow, right? Yeah. And immediately went and kind of found my first investment that wasn't in the backyard. And lost $40,000 on the deal, and then figured out, okay, how do I not lose money on turnkey properties, and just kind of scaled from there.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right. First, thanks for your service. We sincerely appreciate it. We're indebted to you forever. Turnkey. Tell me about that, because I hear a lot of turnkey providers and I see a lot of doctors, probably more in any profession, always asking me about turnkey stuff, right? Because you want to get in the game, and turnkey sounds like an easy way to do it.
Yes, absolutely. So that's what's enticing about it, right? Is, all right, how do I get these deals? And I need to cash flow them, right? What's funny is I'm in Augusta, Georgia. So it's a great rental market at the time. I didn't know this, right? And I'm like, where's the best like cash flow opportunity? So I'm looking and I'm like, ooh, Detroit's going to be it. So that already is a great start. It wasn't a bad, it was a purchase price of right around $70,000. Day one cash flow at $950,000. There was a tenant. Yeah. I bought it sight unseen through the provider. Yeah. And this is that classic story. The tenant moves out within 30 days, copper gets ripped out, it floods, and there was foundation issues. I put about $20,000 into it, couldn't find anybody, had to sell it at $40,000. So that was about the rough thing. I had to sell to another investor at a mass discount, not knowing the market. And then when I saw, I was like, all right, immediately when I went into that, right, it was cash flow, $950,000 for $70,000. That's above that 1% hole. Yep. But this is when I started figuring out, like, how do I find the deals? How do they come across it? Right. And that's kind of how I get started, was like that classic go into wholesaling to kind of help find the discounted properties.
Yeah. All right. So that was the entry point after that experience to enter into the investment world as a wholesaler.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the secret, I mean, we already know this, right? If you've been in for a while, but if you're new, right, it's like location, location, location. So I kind of realized like I had a location.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's all your money is made on the buy, not on the sell. Right. So I obviously sold for a loss there. Right. And so it's like, it came down to finding the discounted properties is the secret sauce of the investors, right? Whether it's working with great wholesalers or being one yourself and just going direct to seller, that's the strategy we ended up deploying.
One of the experiences I often see is that everybody thinks the grass is greener on the other side. And what I mean by that is there's some other market that's better than where I happen to be. It can't possibly be good right here. I mean, it's just not the case. It's got to be better in Detroit, in Memphis, some in Florida. There's a population increase in Dallas, Texas.
Exactly.
Not to say the markets aren't good there, but it's not always greener. And you're going to compound problems when you're not there physically.
Yeah, not by a long shot, right? Like, sure, we could agree that there's like better flip, like better doesn't mean that you can't flip in even, we're a rental market, hands down, but there are still great flips to be had.
Yeah.
Absolutely can do like up to six-figure flips here. Yeah. Is it common? Sure, no. But like there's deals to be had, like you just said, everywhere.
Right. You know? So you got good at defining deals and you were going presumably seller direct and got dialed in on the marketing side.
Absolutely. Like as wholesalers, it's actually way less about real estate and much more on marketing and sales, right? Like I'm marketing and sales. Real estate is a byproduct. Technically, I don't flip real estate like a flipper does. I flip paper. Right. That's the actual transaction part. But really, the heart of it all is marketing and sales, while a real estate investor is not focused on the marketing and sales. So yeah, that's the main focus on that.
Well, my experience has been, and I want your input here, has been those who are really good at system structure operations can excel real fast, real quick, real significant dollars and cents as a wholesaler. And then many of those people would struggle if they were to go into another section of this business.
That's what I'm noticing as well. As a matter of fact, I am not a construction person, right? Like that is like far from it. So I actually don't do a lot of whole type of like a flips like that. So our order of operation is first wholesale. And if it doesn't wholesale, see if it flips. Most of the time it doesn't flip because I would have probably wholesaled it, right? Right. And then a buy and hold. And my buy and hold box is very different. Because of my experience, I go for less than 20 years old. I'm looking for that long-term game. I don't look for cash flow today because the wholesale provides the cash flow for today. Yep. So 100%, like your systems and operations. And it's funny that you said that, Neil, because like I've only been doing this for a few years. I got, you know, 15 to 20 years of system engineering and experience that I was able to apply. I'm like, wait, wholesaling is just consistently doing the same thing over and over. Yep. Sounds a lot like automating and building a team and scaling, right?
Correct.
So it's exactly what it is.
Yep. Yeah. Then I've seen a whole lot of people who are really good at that construction, the rehab basis, the kind of having to think and solve big problems who fall on their face on the wholesale side, because the big problem is like put the system in place and then just do the system over and over and over and do not stop. And they can't do that.
No, they want the differences. They want the unique problems, right?
They need that. Right.
Yeah. And then the differences is like they're really good at managing projects, good with their hands, even especially if they're the ones that are in there working with contractors, not realizing that this is, if you don't have any sales experience, good luck on that side because it's all sales. It's helping people overcome an obstacle, right? And
correct,
pushing for a sale, so to speak. So that's why people that are really good salesperson, you know, salesman, saleswomen are really good at probably wholesaling, but won't flip because they don't want to manage all the details, the tedious details that are behind a flip, right? Managing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's no right or wrong. It's just a matter of a function of what's right for you.
Yes, 100%. I've come to realize, Neil, that in the end, you want to turn either one of these into a business. And it comes down to like, I realized that wealth is actually made through business and preserved through real estate. If I flip wholesale, I'm only as good as my last contract. If you're flipping a home, you're only as good as your last flip. And the way you really get cash flow is through most of the time through equity, right? It's through having a margin between what you owe or what you're going to pay and what you're getting in rent. And that happens through equity, whether it's sweat, transactional, flipping, right? Or through cash. So that's just some things I help people through is like, don't get too enticed on go buying a whole bunch of $50 cash flowing homes. Build capital first and then invest.
I'll say exactly what you just said. I'm just going to say it differently. Wealth is built through the concentration of time, energy, effort, and it's retained through diversification.
Love that. 100% agree with that. Yes. Anything active. Absolutely like that. Your time.
That's exactly right. Well, talk to me about, you know, what you see on an ongoing basis. I know you help and you advise people in terms of their businesses. You're super skilled at the systems and the structure and identifying how to make certain tweaks to get people to get out of their own way, really, and scale up their business. What are the top like 2-3 things that you see that people that are holding people back?
Yeah. So right now what people are doing is, so first off, when we look at scale, I want to give a couple of simple rules of business that I've come up to like. Find out what's working. And then rule number two is really simple. Don't change what's working. Okay. It's that simple. Yeah. So like if you're good at your marketing channel, pick one channel. So like I'm going to keep it real simple. Yeah. Marketing, sales, and operations. Okay. Marketing. Pick one channel, dominate it. If you do direct mail, cold calling, whatever it is, even if it's making offers on MLS, you should know that I'm 38 offers away from getting a deal, right? Whatever that reverse is. If you want a $50,000 truck, you should know that I need to send out 112,000 mailers, or I need to make 6,000 dials, you know, to get this dollar amount. That's understanding a marketing channel. Once you've done that, don't stop it, add to it, right? So that's like the first step. After you got marketing, pick a channel, get good at sales. And this is where I see the mistake made is like getting better with sales. And I want to tell people 70 to 80% of the deals that we made is done in follow-up. Mm-hmm. 12 touches, 12 points of contact with the seller at different times that we need to do through text, a phone call, 12 different interactions before deals are made. That's what we're looking for. And most people will stop at 3.
Correct.
So the real money is made. And this is the secret, if I were to give it out right now, is fine tune and implement a follow-up system, a follow-up process, right? What does that mean? When do you contact the person next and how frequent? If you call once, and they don't pick up, what is your step? What is your process on what you're going to do? Are you going to wait a month or just go to the next person that answers and spend more money on marketing and trying to use marketing dollars to solve a sales problem? And this doesn't cost you any money. It's a way of growing revenue with $0 spend.
There's gold in that database.
Yes, that's it. The money is in the database. We say this all the time. So when you hear these phrases, But there's money in the database. What it means is there's leads waiting for you right now that either your competitor is going to take, because there's only one thing that kills all deals, and it's time. Mm-hmm. If you have a motivated seller, time is what's going to kill the deal. Foreclosure, a bank, another investor, a family member, a neighbor that's going to buy the deal, right? That's what kills all deals.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Tell me, I'm curious as to the environment that we're in now, and we're recording this at the in December of 22. So, you know, we look back a year, interest rates have doubled, let's call it, I'm rounding, for in a year. I'm curious, in your world, in your business, what have you seen? What's been the difference? How have you pivoted?
Absolutely. Adjust your buy box. Don't live in the delusion that it's always going to keep going up. Yes, it's inevitable to go up over a period of time, but adapt. So great example is the news, the media, we call that noise. That's not news to my business. I sell to investors and the investors sell to retail buyers. So we look at the news of the buyer. So for us, we're seeing that investors will notice the trend ahead of time of the sellers. So we have a gap right now where the buyers are buying it cheaper and the sellers still think it's worth a lot of money. So what we've done is we've adjusted our buy box. So if you're an investor, just pay attention. Stop overshooting ARV, right? Everybody that was investing in 2021 could have made mistakes and just the market helped them. Now it's going to cost you for the mistakes. So be conservative. We're seeing on average 10 to 20% reduction in our ARV estimates and an increase slightly in the price just from construction and all of that for repairs. Yeah. And so that's what we're setting the standard in, is you create a buy box to protect you, right? So stick with it. And what people will forget is adjust the buy box based on the market. So right now I'm seeing that consistently. Now, if you're in hyper competitive markets, right? Like Phoenix, Arizona, California. I mean, if you've seen that double over the last 2 years, you got to expect a big drop and decrease.
Yep.
Right. In your like the belt states, the Southwest, your Midwest, that kind of stuff, you probably saw a slight increase. So expect a slight stabilization or minor decrease. And that's what we're seeing. So we're not, what we're doing is we're no longer at mass appreciation. We're in deacceleration. We haven't mass depreciated nationwide, right? Right.
Correct.
It's markets very local and we know this. So that's just what I'm seeing from all the different clients I work with in the different markets. One marketing channel may not be working well. So like direct mail isn't working as well in Dallas, Texas specifically. So do a little bit more of what we call guerrilla marketing. Go door knock those foreclosures. Get proactive, right? It's just you got to adapt your marketing for the current market conditions.
Yeah, no, we're seeing the exact same thing. That's good advice, is to adjust that buy box. It seemed like, you know, in 2000, you know, think back the last couple of years, that buy box had to be pretty tight. You were paying up a pretty good percentage of ARV. And now buying a little deeper, right? And that delta, what you said, where buyers are buying and where sellers are selling, there's a pretty big delta in many cases right now. We're seeing the same thing on the commercial side. There's no doubt about it. A whole bunch of people want last year's prices.
Right. 100%. Right. And last year's interest rates to be right along with it.
Correct. Yeah, right. You're exactly right about that. Tell me about your team structure. I'm curious as to what the team looks like.
Perfect. So we're a really small team. So we're local in Augusta, but we run it almost virtually. I don't have an office, right? We're at a home office and we run it local. So our normal team makeup, we have two acquisition members, two people that go on appointments and lock up the contracts and deal. We have one, what we call disposition. This is a person who helps sell the deal, works with investors. Then we have like our local office admin who kind of runs around, drops keys, does errands. Then I have the overall operations manager that runs that team and two virtual assistants. So real small, tight-knit team, and we do about 100 deals a year.
Have you been to the vault? RealGritVault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on, and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free, totally free. RealGritVault.com. Ever been on the show who's brought everything? It's all behind the vault. Get it. RealGritVault.com. That's terrific. You work with a number of people nationwide advising them on their business. I'm curious. Team structures, I'll call it small, which I think what you've just described is perfect in size. Their percentage of their net income, so the percentage of their gross income, smaller teams make far more money as a percentage than bigger teams. Fair.
That's exactly it. Right. So I don't care about gross revenue as much. I care about what's net profit, because I've seen companies that'll be 4x our gross revenue and exact same net profit. So who's really winning? Three times the team size, three times the headaches, same level of net income, right? So we will hover on average. Most of my clients are going to hover right around 40% net profit, which is really great. they once their team is especially built out, the less you have on your team, the more active you're involved, you can get up to 60%, 100%, but you got a high paying job. I work about 10 hours or less a week, on average, about 6 to 8 hours a week in the business, where I, you know, holding meetings and pretty much just, that's it, just the oversight and leading, right? Outside of that, my team runs the day to day.
Yeah, no, that's tremendous. I just want to bring that up because I've seen a lot of people going, I want a big wholesale business. Mm-hmm. And I've seen lots of big wholesale businesses make very little money.
Right. It's the overhead. So that's why we operate.
Right.
Because that's when things get tight, the first thing you have to start doing is reducing your expenses.
Correct. So
reducing the offices. And what's sad is some people start reducing people. And people are one of the last few things, especially your revenue generators. So like your salespeople is one of the last things you want to start cutting, because now you're tailoring and cutting back your business, right?
Yeah. If they were an expense from the get-go, you've done something wrong.
Yeah. Right now, this is a tip we're giving, is to tighten up. This is the time, sadly, like let your B and C players go. Don't try to grow them and evolve them at this point. Reduce that and keep your top performers around and build that.
I would agree with that. I take it one step further. Those C players never should have been on your team to begin with.
I love it. I am 100% with you on that. If you have a good culture and a good system, you help grow B to A players.
That's exactly right.
That's it. But your C players should be filtered out. And here's a great example, Neil. We just experienced this. Brought somebody else on our team, and your culture should do this. People were shocked, but we lost the guy. He quit in 2 weeks. I'm thankful, because guess what? I don't want somebody who's on the team for 3 to 6 months and then I got to let go. That's more painful than somebody coming in 2 weeks and then my culture just squeezed that person out. That's exactly what it should do.
We had the same thing occur, but it occurred in 5 days. And then our debrief from the team was, how do we get this to occur, but them to not take the job? I want to get them to never come on. I'm afraid it happened in 5 days, because I'm with you. The cost associated with going 5 months and the pain and everything else, terrible, terrible, terrible. But how do we get them never to come on? I want to make sure that culture gets revealed before they say yes.
So you know what's funny, Neil? I made a mistake, and this is the importance of following a process. We're not perfect, but I omitted one part of my interview, and I had a gut feeling where I shouldn't have violated my own rules. The guy went through 5 interviews pretty much, and there's 2 of them where I was trying to, like, I wanted him to work out.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake. And then here's our interview sequence. So if you're interviewing, even if you're a one-person show, here's what I recommend. 1, get at least a phone interview. And ideally, if it's not you, I don't care if it's a sister, brother, office admin. I just want to make sure that they appear on time, because half of the people don't even show up for interviews. Waste of my time to time block. So I have my assistant do the first interview, just 15 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yep.
Second interview should be with you or somebody who's in the skill set, right? So they'll interview with me over Zoom. My 3rd interview is a day in the life. This is where they come down and I do 2 hours of in the job experience. I want them to be like, oh gosh, no. Or I see them in the moment. So like for our sales, we give them a script. I give them the script in advance. So I want to see if they actually study it, if they're proactive, or if they're just seeing it for the first time there. And then I get to see how they do, and I get to test coachability. Yeah. So I get them on the phones, give them the coaching. Do they respond? How well are they picking it up? Test them. The final one is I let them go on a team lunch without me, because I want to see how they vibe in culture and get the feedback of the team.
Yeah.
Then I hire. And it's a multiple step process. But what you're doing is you're testing for, first off, the quick filter. Do I like them? Are they culture fit for me? Then do they have the skills? And then do they fit the culture of the team? Yeah. Is there something I don't see? And I do a team lunch, and it benefits the team. They love going out to lunch.
I absolutely love that. We have a very similar process to you. And I'm picked a couple pieces, which we will now implement based on what you just said. I love that. And how many people out there, and you run into it all the time, and I talk to them too, they go, I had one interview. That's what you do. You have one interview, then you hire somebody. I'm like,
no,
you have to follow a process. And sometimes it takes getting burned a few times and you're like, well, now I got to have a process.
Yes, it does. Right. And if you realize, so here's the thing, take a look at your first step, which is the interview. If you find that you're having a lot of turnover, right? So to me, my job post is like marketing. And here's what marketing is supposed to do. It's supposed to attract the people that you want and repel those that you don't.
That's right.
And then your interview is a sales process. This is where I'm trying to sell them the opportunity. I want them to sell me as well. So you want to fine tune that front end, so you're not bringing them in to find out, wow, this isn't a fit, and then you're killing your time.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. Culture-wise, how would you define your culture?
All right. So I love that when you talk about how do we define the culture. First off, have core values, right?
Yeah.
Have and define core values. I have a really awesome system and process I'd be willing to actually give out to your audience on how can they create their own core values, right? Don't just Google something. Don't just pull up grit, hustle and stuff because you see the words out there. There's a good process on finding it. But then there's an important part. Do not have core values. I've seen people, Neil, where they got it up on their wall. Yeah. And I've asked a client, I'm like, hey, what are your core values? And they're like, grit, hustle.
Yeah.
You got to look back. That's not your core values. Okay.
That's right.
So like, for instance, ours, and I want to use this as an example. It's actually right here in our logo. Selfless ownership strives under the roof of integrity. These are all about being people, selfless servants. You serve everybody but yourself first, buyers, sellers, vendors, and employees, right? You take ownership in everything we do. Even if it's the attorney's fault, take ownership and figure out how we can prevent it next time. Strive for more. You're either going to grow or you're not. And if you're not willing to grow, this is not the organization for you. If you want to come into a job and stay doing the same thing for the next 5 to 10 years, this won't work out for you. And none of that matters without integrity, okay? Doing the right thing always, even when no one's looking always. Now, why is that important to us? Because when I work with people, we praise and discipline on core values. It's not the technical tool, whatever they messed up on. If they made a decision and it cost the company $500 or $1,000, but they followed a core value, that is nothing wrong on them. Nothing is wrong there because they followed a core value. So we always collect and be like, did we take ownership of this? Was this something that we could have done? Or, hey, great job on going above and beyond. You really were a selfless servant. Here's the gift card. So I tie it all to a core value, not a document, not feelings and gut, core values. And we create culture on it and we talk on it, right? And that's what's important about it. And we actually do what we say we are. That's the most important part.
That's incredible. Where did the core values for you, where did that grow out of?
Perfect. So it's fun. So this will be a little nugget on it. It came out where you think of somebody in your life that had the biggest impact to you, that was 18 and older, you knew them, they knew you. And then you write down 5 attributes of these 3 different people. And then what's funny is when you look at the attributes of these individuals and you correlate across, that's actually not an attribute about them. Because you could say,
nope.
Neil, I know you're a nice person, you're professional, you're this. But I bet you there's somebody else who might say, man, Neil is not professional. Neil's not nice, right? But the reason why I see that in you is because they're actually my values that I'm tying to you.
That's so right.
Common word across multiple people, that's a core value to you.
Yeah, what I hear you saying is they're a reflection of yourself. And you just hit, and for you, what you've done is put an exercise in place so that you can identify that within yourself, what it is that's core to you.
Absolutely. Because everybody's going to say they're nice. Somebody's going to say, like, unless they're really, really not, then that's fine, right? And most people are going to say, oh, yeah, I'm honest, right? But it may not be core. It may be what we call like an aspirational value, like I want to, but it's not core. So here's an example of a core. Yeah. If you see, you know, somebody drops the dollar and they're already gone, what do you do with the dollar, right? Do you see, do you give it to the donation? Do you give it to them? Do you keep the dollar? What do you do, right? How do you want to handle that? A great example, and I use these stories because I ask people, give me an example where you executed integrity. And I want to hear their story. And if they don't have a good one, then it's not core. Like, it's just not something they think about or do. But like, for instance, on us, we got a closing documents and they actually credited us $500 that we should not have gotten on the HUD. And everybody had signed and it was closing. Like, it was closed. We had the check and it was like, no, this is not right. And we gave it back. Nobody would have come around because everybody got their funds and we're good. Yep. But that's integrity. It's doing the right thing always. Yep. And the reason why that's so important is my employees are watching and I want them to hold that same level, and they do things when I don't see it. They're running the culture. That's culture.
Yeah. It's doing the things when no one's looking, right?
Yeah. 100% doing the right thing always, even when no one's looking, right?
Yeah.
Find a wallet on the side of the street. What do you do with it? Do you take the cash and throw the wallet? I mean, you just found it. Do you mail the wallet? What do you do? Right.
Right.
Do you do it when no one is looking? There's no wrong answer. That's fine. But like, some people, it would eat them. It would bother them. And that's. Correct.
I love that exercise, the ability to do that, because I can think through a handful of people in my life, right? The most influential people. And I've been able to identify, you know what? I've never done the exercise, but we have core values, of course, that I had to give thought to, just not through that exercise.
Yeah.
When I think about that in that manner, I'm like, absolutely, I can identify my core values with people.
100%, right? Like, you start seeing it, and that's how you know you got them core. It's really powerful.
That's great. Tell me about a time, you know, everything's not always easy. Businesses, what's the old saying? Real estate's easy, people's hard, right? So maybe what's been the biggest challenge, the biggest loss, the biggest lesson learned that you've had to go through from your journey in business?
All right. So this is the best one. And we actually kind of hit on this with culture. We let go of our top performer. I mean, he was producing the most money, but we let him go because it collided with culture.
Mm.
This was one of the hardest things I realized, is it's not always about the money. Mm-hmm. And when you have to make that hard choice, there was nothing that was wrong. It was just a collision in culture and lack of trust. And the person was great closer, did great things, but it caused more burden on the team to do the extra things. And what's interesting is nobody was saying anything, but as soon as I let it go, they're like, thank goodness, it was a burden. And the team was thankful for it. But it was hard because I just let go of our revenue, right? In business, we're here to make money. And I had to let go of the top performer, but it was impacting the whole team. So that was a hard decision to make, because most people would do the opposite, be like, no, just deal with it. Because like, that person's bringing in so much. but I would be so cautious on putting profits over people.
As a leader, you're charged with doing the things that others cannot or will not do.
It is hard. Yes. And those are the hard things. And that is it, right? That it's making those tough decisions. As a matter of fact, whether you like this or not, I'm not here for the debate on it, but I just recently saw a post with Mark Zuckerberg announcing Facebook or Meta now, 11,000 people layoff, and he takes full responsibility with that and then sent out a Zoom on that, right? That's a hard decision. It's a very hard decision because you're impacting somebody else's life and their family.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's no doubt about that. What's one little underrated, unknown, you know, tool or habit that you possess that you couldn't live without?
All right. So I love this question. Matter of fact, it's sitting on my desk because you say habit. So I'm just starting it this week. So I use this little piece of paper. I know it's going to be hard to see and I'll just kind of talk on it, but it's called a habit tracker. So this is like the beginning of December. And I track my habits because I realize what you inspect, you can expect. Yep. And so I'm tracking my habits of the things that I want of wealth, health, and relationships. Yeah. Focusing on from prayer for me to doing a walk with the family, writing notes to my family, journaling, reading my book, and reading my Bible. Making sure I do those things every day has consistently helped me in every aspect of my life, that including business, because I come out as a better person for everybody else.
What prompted you to do that?
One book. If you get a chance to read it, it's great. It's called Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits. I've read it. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Excellent book.
It is, right? It talks about ways of like removing bad habits and replacing with good and what to do and the importance of it. And this tracker kind of came about it. And we've been doing this for a few years and it's been life-changing.
Thinking back to your childhood and growing up, how did that impact who you are and then the path you've gone down today?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm the oldest of five siblings and we're all a year apart. And so that right there was just kind of one of the things, we're so close in age, but I was still looked up to as the oldest the whole life, you know, first one venturing out, first one doing these things. Yeah. I've always been looked up to in that way. And I always felt like that responsibility of just taking care of people and just looking out for people's better, you know, best interest. And it feels like it just kind of aligned really well as I went through the military, learned more, became better. And then all throughout my career and now within business, where what's interesting is I believe the hierarchy chart is upside down in our organization. It's very simple. I serve my people serve business. I just simply set vision and I do everything to serve the people but the job. So if my guys are making sales calls, I do everything but pick up the phone. I get a system in place. I provide the training. I walk through things. I do everything that I possibly can to help them, except pick up the phone, because that is what they're there for, right? To talk to the seller. But I will coach, I will mentor, I will do all of this stuff, put more time into it, invest more resources, right? That is what my job is. So that org chart, I believe, should be upside down wholeheartedly.
Leaders eat last, right?
Yes, 100%.
Looking forward to 2023, where are you headed? Where's the business headed?
Well, we're actually looking to grow. We're shifting from just being local into our market. So we're going to try and just have fun with the doubling. We're going to double the revenue, double the deals, and we're going to try and tap into another market. My favorite part for my personal development is I'm now focusing on developing leaders in our organization. Yeah. So I've got this young person I'm really looking forward to helping cultivate and develop. I've got another leader that's working with my virtual team that's going to want to grow and expand that. And then just me helping other operators, multiple clients, right? Learning more on how I can help people be better leaders, not how to be just an executor.
Yeah. Let's move into the final segment, what I call 4-4 Impact.
4-4 Impact.
Your favorite quote, motivation is what gets you started. Habits is what keeps you going. Jim Rome said it. What about that resonates most with you?
Well, because motivation is temporary and everybody looks at that as like, it's a permanent thing. And so motivation is like at the height of motivation, take action immediately, take action. And then it's the consistent little actions consistently without a hiccup that creates the habit. Like now, like I literally have a habit tracker and it's like, I feel off when I don't do it because it's been a habit. It's like brushing your teeth, right? You get up, you just do it. You don't think about it. It's just like a motion. But to get started on creating those habits, it takes a lot of motivation to get started, but do not only focus on motivation. You want to create a process around it and create a habit because that's longevity, right? Motivation is temporary.
Yeah. What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
Analysis paralysis, if I was being very direct. Here's the thing. I like this phrase, done is the new perfect. Yeah. The perfect plan never gets executed. All these phrases, here's what it simply means. Take massive, imperfect action. You have just enough information. For anybody who's listening, stop with the education. Just stop today and take action. What you just heard in the last week or whatever you've learned, just go take action on it. Because here's what I've realized. It's the instruction you get from mentors or different people, platforms, plus your action equals your education. It is not information that gives you your education and then you take action. It is your instruction, your action, and that is your education, and it's a feedback loop.
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
So it really is people. I thought it was systems, but I really enjoy serving people. I get excited. I get my emotional paycheck is what I call it when my clients get results. I don't know what it is. It just fuels me up and I'm like, let's go. And it just fire. So it's seeing people get results and get action on that. I love it.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Serving. Really, it's serving. And it doesn't have to be just with like time and physical labor. But I love when I get to have an impact of like when somebody calls me and we talk with the clients, I love having an impact because I not only impact that leader, I impact the organization and the sellers they work with. So we operate wholesaling with a high level of integrity, ethics, and morals, right? It's no sleazy. We're very open and upfront. And I love consulting that way and helping others have that ripple effect that I just can't see. That right there is so impactful and important to me.
Yeah, just terrific. It's a deep impact there.
Yeah, it really is.
We launched the Real Grit Vault here in the recent past, in the last few months. And I understand you're making a contribution to the Real Grit Vault virtual assistant checklist. Tell the listeners a little about that.
Oh, this is fantastic. So if you're looking for virtual assistants and you're going to leverage a tool like Upwork, I've got some little filters that you do on how you can find A players easily instead of trying to, just like with your interview process, you don't take the first one. And just like when you go in to post a job, you don't just take the first person who applies, slap a filter and be proactive and go pick up those A players. And that's what this filter does. Shows you the exact checklist on what you can select in your advanced filtering for Upwork.
That's terrific. I appreciate the contribution to the tool. Anybody can get it there, www.realgritvault.com. Say, inside of your business, how maybe when you help other people in other markets, how do you do so? What does that look like?
Oh, this is great. We come in and we actually focus on those main three things, right? Marketing, sales, and operations. And we see where we need to dial it down. A little secret about this is the whole time I'm working with them on leadership and culture at the same time. It's just not, that's not what people are looking for as an answer on, but it's part of the process. And so I like to help people with scaling and growing from wherever they're at, from a few deals to no team members, and helping them with their first hire all the way to managing a team and trying to grow that business in there and moving forward on it.
People want to find you, follow you. They want to connect. Where can they go? What should they do?
Absolutely. They can go to either check me out on Facebook, scalebysystems.com. You can go there, take a look at the website, or connect at scalebysystems.com and feel free to connect. I love to serve and help the community any way I can. Any questions, nothing's off limits.
That's terrific. We'll make sure we get all those links below in the show notes. Fans, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect. It's a fun story about how you came from, you know, serving is the commonality through your whole life. You serve this country and now you just, you found your space, your home in real estate and systems, and you serve your team and now other people throughout the country and doing what it is that they do. So really terrific. I appreciate the conversation. I really enjoyed this, got a lot out of it. And I'm certain the audience did as well. So thank you for your time.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. And again, if I can help in any way, please let me know. It's my favorite part. I enjoy this stuff.
No, sounds great. Thanks, Vance. I will see you soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
For everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology and times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits. Or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off-market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing a 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving that passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com, 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now, register, it's totally free, 20xprofitchallenge.com, and I'll see you in the challenge.